All right, good to see everybody. My voice is not yet at 100% strength, but we're making incremental progress. I wanted to, just as we prepare to finish this sukkah, which I think we'll all agree is both fascinating and very sobering in terms of the stakes and the seriousness of the issues and the relevance of the issues, in so many different ways, that what I'm trying to project is really in many ways not quite a das yachid, because again, you have the Yerushalmi and the Hagos Maimonides and the Kesef Mishnah and the Beis Yosef, but in terms of my attempt to synthesize the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, there is something unique about that, not entirely in the sense that the Bach wanted to say that in the Gemara, that there's a chiyuv hachnas esatzmo b'safik sakana kedei lahatzil eschavero bevadai sakana. But what I'm obviously trying to do is use the Rambam and the Sefer HaMitzvos to neutralize what the Bach says in the Hemshech, namely that the Rambam himself made it about yachol, meaning that it's vadai, yachol atzilo, and it's not safik sakana. I was saying that the Rambam, in fact, seems much more to me, at least in the Sefer HaMitzvos, and if you're willing to extrapolate from there, to be saying that yachol means that you have the basic capacity to do so, as opposed to somebody who is unable to swim, is unable to stage a commando raid, etc. At that point, it would certainly not be part of the mitzvah of lo samar al dam reyacha, and might, depending on just how grave the situation was, might actually be aser. So that's the gist of our approach. So what we'll do with today is to start with the approach of Meir Simcha, and then we'll circle back to the Radvaz, and then give the Aruch HaShulchan the last word. So this was a very strongly held view of Meir Simcha. He says it in two different places, as you saw, both in the Meshech Chachma and in the Ar Sameach. So Eitan Barinholtz, you want to do the honors today? What's that? Right. So, what's the Remeir Simcha's point in terms of Moshe Rabbeinu? All of Klal Yisrael is suffering. Apparently, the Geula is waiting. They're definitely bevadai sakana, right? People are dying every single day in horrible circumstances. But
even if he would be in a safek sakana, if he went to save Israel, he wouldn't have to go back.
Right. So you said that. Well, in utzarech lahachnas atzmo b'sakana, avi to. Your point, and I've tried to lend my support to it. It's not clear from the Ar Sameach that there's any Isser involved, right? Had Moshe wanted to, but he doesn't have to. Eino tzarech lahachnas atzmo b'sakana. Now, in terms of the issue of safek sakana versus vadai sakana, I too would caution some moderation on this point, because again, very often, Reb Meir Simcha is trotted out, like as if he's saying that it's aser. I don't think he said it's aser. He says you don't have to. The second point is, what situation was he dealing with in terms of Moshe Rabbeinu? Kimesu kol nashima mivakshim es nafshacha. Right. So that might be a particular kind. That might be like what we might call like suffix, a kind of plus. Or minus, depending on your perspective, but it might be worse, right? Than jumping into the water. The water is dangerous, but right here there are people with a bounty on his head. So I think that's material also. If you know that individuals, especially in the context of a state, are looking to kill you, So I would say that's a pretty high level of sakana relative to. So this I think is important. He never said it's usur, and the relative degree of sakana is very, 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 very high. Let's just connect that to the point that he wants to make. The Rambam in Chosr Tzeach. Yeah. Okay. So Meir Simcha again. Hosef Rabbeinu Tam. Right, this is Hatzalas HaRabim. This isn't just, you know, the Yachid, but... Okay. So this is now stronger language, right? What has the Remeir Simcha added here? Ainlo, right? Shouldn't do this. Right, so Remeir Simcha has a little bit of a cryptic line. I really wish I could ask him what he means by this. He says, if you look at the Yerushalmi really carefully, it's not clear that the Yerushalmi ever said, right, Eino Muchach L'mayin Heitev Bo, Chayev L'hachnas Atzmo B'Safek Sakana. I'm not sure what he meant by that. I'm going to make a suggestion in a second. Maybe one of you guys will actually make the suggestion. But let me just make a point in terms of the lesson of the Rambam. It is true that Remeir Simcha, not so much in the Meshech Chachma, but in the Or Sameach, does project a kind of an iser, right? Ein lo, you shouldn't do this. I do think it's possible to read the Rambam differently, though. V'im yatsa, what does Rambam say? Hitra atzma l'misa kamo shebiarnu. At that point, right, if the Goal Haldam decides to leave, right, so then, excuse me, if the Rotzeach B'Shgaga decides to leave, so then the Goal Haldam can kill him. So what alternative way of reading the Micah? Right. So there are consequences, right, and you'll have to bear those consequences, but it's not clear to me that the Rambam ever projected an Isser in so doing. Secondly, seems to me that that case is somewhat anomalous relative to the case of Tobeah bin Nahar. Going to the Er Miklat is an onesh. The Rambam here is strongly projecting the fact that a Rotzeach B'Shgaga, you know, has to live with the consequences of, you know, his negligence. I would question how representative that case is of more neutral cases like Roes Chaveiro, Toveha Binar, Chai Gararto, Listin Bain Alav, Rofe Sheyachol Raposo. The counter pressure here seems to me much greater. And even in this context, the Rambam doesn't quite say that it's aser. He says, you have to live with the consequences, hitra atzmo l'misa. Now, Remeir Simcha does, and that's important, not in the Meshech Chachma, but in the Or Sameach, he seems to say, ein lo l'hachas atzmo b'safek sakana. Now, anybody want to try to get at what Remeir Simcha might have been saying about the Yerushalmi? He says, the Hagos Maimonios projects the Yerushalmi in very, very aggressive terminology. Apparently, it did pass muster with Rav Yosef Karo. But Eitan, what do you think? Like, we'll take either one. is it possible to read the Yerushalmi differently? I mean, I acknowledge those words themselves don't appear in the Yerushalmi. So let's assume that there was a Vaday Sakana. Yonasan Ikare Chames Besadino, that he was as good as dead if Reish Lakish didn't intervene. But what might be Meir Simcha's point about the Yerushalmi? Does the Yerushalmi support the Agos Maimuni, who's saying Chaya L'Hachnas Atzma B'Savei Sakana? Yeah, Tzvi, go ahead.
Maybe he says it's still based on your choice.
Yeah, right. The Yerushalmi presents Reish Lakish. I think that's what he means. I can't be sure. It's a Ma'isa Rav, for sure. It does create a precedent. Certainly a permission structure. But Avi, maybe Remeir Simcha was already on to this idea. So he's saying the Yerushalmi doesn't even say you have to. And maybe, you know, the Bavli is saying that you shouldn't. Okay. So, you know, we're dealing here in shades of gray. All right, that's the bottom line. That things, you know, continue to get more and more nuanced. So, you know, on that note, Amitan, why don't we take a look at the Chubas Haradvaz? Because even though the Talmud of the Minchas Chinuch presented it in like absolutist terms, I think that the Radvaz is actually, you know, very subtle in his approach. Okay. Right. So it seems to me that was the part of the tshuva that the Talmud showed the Minchas Chinuch, right? If you stop there, right, one has a very strong, right, impression that Lo Samad Al Dam Reyacha could only possibly be implicated, right, by a scenario in which, you know, the person faced no danger whatsoever. By the next line, you see that the target is moving. Like, what does that mean? You know, like a 0% chance? How is that even possible? And where did he come up with that? Like, Chayav L'Hatzel B'Mamono? Right, when the Gemara says Vashivo Solo, that would be Begufo, but, you know, Megara Gure, that's Lo Samud. Okay, so far the Radvaz had said, oh, okay, Ktas Suffix Sakana. Now, I'm not sure, you know, we would sit here, that's what Emmanuel was talking about yesterday, and say, you know, trying to save your friend from a wild animal was only Ktas Suffix Sakana, but, you know, maybe if you're Crocodile Dundee, you know, when you spend your life wrestling alligators, unfortunately, I think that story did not end well. Right? Wasn't?
Yeah.
Right. Haraya. Right. So even if you are a Crocodile Dundee. Okay. Debari has AK.
Ella Filu Shama Aku Kule below Bari has AK Kule Hai Dilma Imaha Rodia.
Maybe the Gaiam aren't really gonna do it, they're not really gonna kill your friend.
Filafi Kai Vakio, Mimori Silahara Lotana Lutamaro Dameha,
So who had this point even before the Radvaz? Not that much before, because they're separated by only about 150 years. But where did we see that? The Lo Samad Al Damriyacha is triggered even if you don't know that your friend is in a Vadai Sakana, but even if it's just a Suffix Sakana. Yeah, the Ron. Okay. Vehevi Yodeya. Well, the Talmud really didn't show the Minchas Chinuch this line. The other Radvaz seems to be endorsing the Yerushalmi, and he has, to me, what seems, Kini's Daiti, a very persuasive distinction. We know that Lo Samad Al Damriyacha includes both your friend's life, but also his money. But the Radvaz, I think very artfully, is suggesting that, what's the distinction?
If it's for his life, you have to put yourself in suffix, kind of, if it's for his money, you have to do it.
Right. To me, that really stands to reason, that eminently logical position to develop, right? You know, money isn't life. It's not his life and it's not your life, so it's money. But if it's life, you know. So what are the outer boundaries? You know, it's like the Radvaz, you could almost hear him thinking out loud through this, right? Saying, okay, for sure Lo Samad applies if there was no danger to you. And certainly if it was minimal danger, that's got to apply too. All right, he wouldn't incur real danger to save his money, but to save him, yeah, I think so. Like the Yerushalmi says. So, like, when would you draw the line? When would you say, like, no, it's really not appropriate? Oh, and by the way, the Ran will say the Ran also, right? Suffix Sakana, if your friend is only in a Suffix Sakana, you can't just say, well, you know, I'm sure Baronholtz will pull through this one. You know, he's a hardy fella. You're just going to rough him up a little bit. Okay, so Mikol Makom. Okay, so Safek Notel Havadai. It's hard to know exactly what this means. Maybe we have to, you know, appeal to the Eitan book standard, you know, the 70-30 standard, you know, the book doctrine. But Safek Notel Havadai means, like, you know, 100%. So I would say, personally, I'd be conservative about it. I would say, okay, anything about 50%, that's Notel Havadai. So let's say there's a greater chance than not that you'll end up dying from this. So he says, interesting, Enu chayev limtzer atzma lahasil as chavera. Why am I so interested in that line? Yeah, right? You don't have to. But you might want to, right? If it's your child, I'd want to. I'd do it. Oh, go ahead, Eitan. And then I know you have to go in 2 minutes, so we'll get you out of here. Unless the panel wants to come learn the Tshuvas HaRadvaz. I mean, I'm sure they're doing important things, but I'm not sure it's as important as the Tshuvas HaRadvaz.
Yeah, it's probably more productive.
I appreciate that. Okay. Right, so very modestly he finishes off that, so maybe that's the point. If it's 50-50, it's 50-50. If it's, you know, if there's a greater chance than not that you'll save the person, maybe that's Lo Samad Al Damriyacha. Wow. I think the Radvaz ends up being pretty machmir, right? If there's a 60% chance that, you know, you're going to be able to save the guy and you don't want to do it, it sounds like... Your chayav mishum lo samad al damriyacha. Safek inu mochra la notel al atzala. Mochra means, you know, 50-50. Even if you want to say 70-30. So I think that's a very critical point. This is why if you show your Rebbe a tshuva, you should really make sure to show him, like, the whole thing. Right? Minchas Chinuch was feeling so validated by this, you know, Radvaz. I'm not so sure. Yeah. Anyway, so that's... That's the Radvaz. And with the Radvaz, again, you know, it really comes down on the side of, you know, aggressive Lo Samad Al Damriyacha. And it seems like when the chances are greater than not that you'll be able to save him and, you know, walk out of there with your life. So you might be obligated to do so. And even in a situation where the chances are greater than not that you'll die, right? Let's say there's a 60% chance that you'll die from this. He doesn't categorically prohibit it, right? Which is really interesting too. Yeah, Avi, go ahead. Right. I think he has to deal with the fact that losamad al damriyacha, according to all of the Rishonim, includes saving your friend's money. So I think he just comes out and says it out loud. But I agree, it's very logical.
What if there would be a suffix of you losing your money in order to save your friend's money? You might lose money in a certain case, and you're trying to save your friend who is definitely going to be losing money.
Right, so that's a whole separate. That's a whole separate issue. You're saying there's no threat to life in any situation, but you know you could prevent your friend a financial loss, but it might cost you. Like, how do you, right? How do we assess that? That's a good question. But we haven't seen anything in this sugya that would give us guidance on how and where to draw the line. Yeah.
How do we say
Well, the Radvaz explicitly agrees to the Ran's case. He thinks lo samad al damriyacha is implicated, even if you're not sure that your friend is really going to die. So let's say I see a group of hoodlums outside beating you. So what does the Torah require of me? I might say, they'll probably just rough him up. Ross is, he's a very hardy fellow. He can take a punch. He's got a tough chin. And it just keeps on going, right? So I might be mechuyev mishum lo samad al damriyacha. The Ran thinks so. The Radvaz thinks so. Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Is the suffix that the Radvaz is talking about suffix that the matzil is in suffix sakana, or the guy is sitting there maybe gonna die, maybe not gonna die?
Both. He deals with both of those cases. So the major part of the tshuva is obviously about how much sakana do you have to be willing to incur to save somebody else. He says, certainly if there's no sakana to you, certainly if there's a little bit of sakana to you, but his chiddush is that if there's a greater chance than not that you'll be able to survive this, so you have to get involved. Then he also adds in, and he thinks that this is true, even if your friend isn't certainly going to die, even if he just, appears like he might. So it's really both. That's harder to define. The Ran didn't define it as well, but like I said, he seems to be really struggling in the water. I don't know, maybe somebody else will pull him out. Maybe he'll catch his bearings. Maybe the current will let up. Maybe a raft will float along. So, yeah, Tzvi.
Is there anyone that says street out, or we could like understand that says that if your friend's in a suffix sakana, that you don't have to put yourself in suffix sakana to save him?
Well, it really depends. I mean, the Ran and the Radvaz are the only ones who say explicitly the other direction. There's something of a chiddush. If you define the Gemara as like a basic fact pattern, where it really seems like there's established lethal danger, Tovei Abinar Chayo Gorar to list in Bainalav, where the natural course of events would be for the person to die, unless there's some intervention, you could easily arrive at that conclusion.
But then, in a case of suffix sakana, there is still a chance that the person could die. So according to the Gemara, let's say they would hold that, then if the person dies, you're not over anything.
Right. So it may very well be right, Svi, that you could say that the statute of los samad al damriyacha has to be clear to all observers that there was risk that the person would die. If you said, honestly, I really didn't think it was that big a deal. I thought that you could imagine such a thing. Sometimes tragedies happen. You know, don't realize that somebody's, you know, really in deep trouble. And, you know, you just assume that they're, whatever, boys will be boys. A little bit of a fracas going on. Let them settle it amongst themselves. Right, so the first is, it just says, v'im yatza hitra'atzon demisa kemosh b'yarnu. I think you have to take the Rambam is saying, like, look, you mean in the case of the Goel Hadam.
Yeah.
So, number one, is that the Rambam says, look, he's not supposed to leave, but if he leaves, he has to deal with the consequences of that. So, that I think, you know, might be the Rambam's way of saying, person decides that, you know, there's hatzalos ha'ravim at stake, Klal Yisrael needs me, maybe I'm going to redeem myself in this moment. So the Goel Adam might kill him. But, you know, and that will be the consequence. The second, you know, point that I was making is, even if you want to deny that, I think that would be unique to the situation of Rotzeach Bishgaga, that because he's received an onesh from the Torah that he has to go begalus into an Ir Miklat, you know, I think it would make sense to say that we're going to treat that person more harshly. We're going to take away some of his agency. For somebody in a more neutral situation, I could see a person having much greater flexibility. Okay. Yeah, Shimon.
So somebody knows how Vada is saying, Vada, more likely that your friend is going to survive.
Which part are you talking about?
At the end of the Ravad.
No. At that point, he's already moved back to the Matzil. The Safek Notel, he just dealt with the Safek on the Nitzel very briefly.
So Notel Vada is...
Right. So imasavik no telavadai. Right. In a situation where, let's say, there's a 70% chance that you're not going to survive this, you're going to jump into water 7 out of 10 times, you'll drown too. Enu chayav l'msaratzma lahatzilas chavero. You're not required. Say it's aser. Afilu b'savik merchos, there's a 50% chance. Enu chayav l'msar nafsho. You don't have to jump in. My chaz is to dami didach sumaktvei, dama dama didei sumaktvei. Maybe your blood is redder. But let's say 7 out of 10 times you'll survive, right? And he was unwilling to take that kind of risk. I think it's a pretty machmir position to maintain. So, you know, he really develops the premise as he gets deeper and deeper into the tshuva. Yeah, and maybe. These are all possible diukim. There's a lot to say about these things. Either way, I think that Rashi is very much, you know, in tension with what we had in the Gemara, as we noted at the time. Okay, so I said, I wanted to give the final word on the matter to the Aruch HaShulchan. As usual, I really like the way that he puts it, you know, after weighing all of the tzadim here. Okay, so Eitan Barinholtz had to, you know, go get into college or something. So, all right, you know, make a hekesh, Zera Shava. Okay. Eitan book. Since we already appealed to the 70-30 rule today, it seems fitting. Okay, so a poskim. Okay, so right, so that's the conventional wisdom, right? That it's a Babli Yerushalmi issue. Friedman has his whole thing about that, but, you know. Okay, the conventional wisdom is Babli, there's Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi represents a minority view, okay? So then the Aruch HaShulchan says something really great.
Or
Shasham or Chosav, right?
Or Chosav. But
The Aruch HaShulchan says something very fascinating. He took it out of context, Emmanuel, and you know, people would get the wrong impression. Where he says, Yeshlishkol ha'inyan v'pelas, you have to weigh it very carefully. V'lalishmor s'atzmo yoser midai. And not be too cautious for yourself at the expense of your friend. You can see his sympathy for the Yerushalmi. In my view, because the Bavli also supposes that, you know, you have to be prepared to take, you know, a significant amount of risk to help somebody. And he ends with a beautiful line, right? V'chol mekayim nefesh miYisrael ki lukiyim olam malei. Right? You know, it could be saving the entire world over here. Don't minimize that. So he says a lot of this is very circumstantial. Hakol lefi ha'inyan. Right? It's very hard, Avi, for us to make clear rules other than saying in a 99% case in either direction, right, you're either mechuyev to do something because there's almost no risk to yourself, or 99% case you're going to die, right? It's almost impossible to argue that you're mechuyev, and it's much more likely for you to be aser for you to do something, even though I'm not sure that we could ever say categorically it's aser. I think most parents would say, if I had a 1% chance of saving my child, I would do it. It would be worth it. So his sympathies really lie with the Yerushalmi. Like Reb Meir Simcha said, it's also possible that the Yerushalmi didn't mandate it either. But the way the Yerushalmi got processed, you know, the Dorei Doros by Nagos Maimonios and Reb Meir Simcha and the Kesef Mishnah was that really is a chiyuv. And that's how the Rabbis took it also, clearly. And he'll, you know, he's willing to say that if there's a greater chance than not, you know, that you'll survive, then you're mechuyev to take that risk. Now, again, I don't know what he means exactly by no telavadai, 70%, 80%, whatever it is, safek mukhra, like more like 50%. But, you know, it comes down to hakolafi ha'inyan. There's a lot, you know, that's riding, you know, on the issue. I just wanted to take a few moments to, you know, deal with one other issue in the modern context, which isn't altogether like a modern issue, but has come up and does come up, unfortunately, you know, from time to time. And that's a case not altogether dissimilar from the case that Reish Lakish was dealing with in the Yerushalmi, but the case of, you know, of hostages. So we all know that there's a din d'rabbanan in the Gemara Gittin, right? Ein podin es hashuyim yoser b'chdei d'mehen mipnei tikkun ha'olam. Right? We don't want to incentivize, you know, people to take hostages. And this comes up all the time in the context of, you know, prisoner trades and whatever it is. Some of you guys probably remember the Gilad Shalit. That was a very big halachic discussion at the time. But something that happened earlier than that, that I wanted to, you know, reflect on a little bit within this context was I think it was 94. You can check me on it. I think it was 94. 93 or 94 was the Nachshon Waxman case. Do you hear of this case? So Nachshon Waxman was a chayal who was nechtaf, and he was taken to like a booby-trapped, sealed-off house where he was held hostage, and, you know, they put out videos. This was, you know, Hamas. A decision was it was a very moving thing. Esther Waxman, his mother, you know, asked everybody to daven for, remember this vividly as a child, you know, that when everybody would light, you know, Nero Shabbos, it was over a Shabbos, this was happening, that they would daven for her son. Very, very moving. So it was a very dangerous situation altogether. He was bevadai sakana. He had some deadline when they were going to kill him. And any military option would, at minimum, constitute a suffix sakana. At minimum. And what ended up happening was that one of the elite units of the Israeli army, Sayyarat Matkal, did go into the house. Nachshon Maksim was killed, and also one of the officers from Sayyarat Matkal was killed as well. And not surprisingly, because, you know, they killed all the terrorists, but that wasn't the issue. The issue was the, you know, they didn't, it was an unhappy result. Nachshon Waxman wasn't saved. And, you know, a person who otherwise was not in the sakana, you know, went into the sakana and died. So how do we think about that? So there are a lot of factors, but, you know, within the framework of the Aruch HaShulchan, I wanted to make the following case, which I, you know, feel pretty strongly about. In the context of the modern Jewish state, with all of its challenges and questions, so there's a certain kind of a social contract that I think exists, which is that the state lives off of two things, siyata dishmaya and the mesiras nefesh of young people. Right? Siyata dishmaya, we understand. Mesiras nefesh of young people, meaning people willing to take on an enormous amount, just to finish the point, you know, quickly, to take on an enormous amount of personal sakana and serve in very dangerous ways for a period of time. Right? That's really the... And the agreement is that, you know, people are going to be willing to do that. Not everybody's willing to do that, obviously. That people are going to be willing to do that. And that if somebody gets into trouble, the state is going to do what it can. The state, I mean, as the representative of the people in this social contract, to try to help. And I think that's very important. And I've argued before in halachic context that that factors into your willingness. It may have been, if you asked, I'm not qualified to answer this question, but if you asked, you know, the officer, let's say the commander of Sayyarat Matkal at the time, you know, what are the chances that you think that you can get him out without any casualties? I'd say very low. The chances of somebody dying are no telavadai. So, again, it's very hard to say that you're mechuyev al pi halacha to do that kind of an operation. But, like the Aruch HaShulchan says, hakol lefi ha'inyan. And here the inyan, I think, is what I would call an inyan gadol ad ma'od. And what I mean by that is, if Israeli parents don't feel that the people, as represented by the government and the army, are going to do everything possible to try to save their children, they're much less likely to send their children to combat kind of situations. So, in this case, the Hatzalas HaRabim, right, the welfare of the whole, again, this is not to diminish from the Siyata Dishmaya, which is required, but the welfare of the whole, to me, militates in favor of taking enormous risks that you wouldn't otherwise take, because the society is basically bound together by a mutual agreement that enormous risks will be taken, because it's not really about Nachshon Waxman, as much as Nachshon Waxman is an Olam Malay, but Nachshon Waxman becomes a stand-in for all of the people in the country. And to whatever extent you believe that all the Jews in the world are protected to some extent by the existence of a Jewish state, so then it's really a Hatzalas HaRab. Now again, if you're an Uttere Karta, you don't agree with any of this for, you know, very deep theological reasons, and, you know, a person could disagree with all of it. I'm just saying that my view has been that, you know, the Hatzalas HaRabim component, whether it's in things like the Gilad Shalit scenario or the Nachshon Waxman scenario, because the social contract depends so heavily on people believing that, you know, the rest of the Jewish people, the state, will endeavor to try to save their child, right, from certain harm in a case of Shevi, in a case of captivity, I think that militates in favor of taking great risks, enormous risks, even risks that are no to El Havadai, because the morale of the people and people's basic willingness to continue to sacrifice depends on it. If people feel that, you know, their children are going to be abandoned, that's a very, very, very dangerous situation for the Jewish people, because, you know, you're going to have a basic unwillingness to take on those risks to begin with. And the viability of a Jewish state seems to rely upon two things: siyata dishmaya and a willingness for people to make enormous sacrifices. You know, so again, I think that those are some very important factors to take into consideration, and that's why I would say hakol lefi ha'inyan, you know, really, really does insert itself in this case in a dramatic way. Okay, very good. So that-